Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
When I look at our defense just throughout training camp, these guys are really, they're competitive. They're edgy. They play together. And I see a really good unit, like, gelling together defensively. They're making a lot of plays, and they're playing with enthusiasm as well. Not only just the enthusiasm, but they're really executing very well. And that's, you know, credit to those guys really putting in the work with their coaches to being on the detail. So they're doing an outstanding job.
They're doing an outstanding job. Welcome in, everybody. Live from West Virginia in our Airbnb, day 11 of Texans training camp, day 2 here in West Virginia. We will be out there today at the Greenbrier. Okay, right off the top, welcome in Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. We're with you till 8 o'clock today. Today's our last two-hour show. Back to 4 hours tomorrow. D'Amico Ryans, at least if he's talking about yesterday, maybe he's talking more, Seth, about the generalities of camp.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's talking about yesterday, he is way underselling what the defense did yesterday.
Oh, it was man, they were a machine. They were a vicious force. It was like the Globetrotters coming in to play against a little league team.
Oh my God.
It was pretty impressive. It would be so much fun to watch if it was a joint practice.
Yeah.
Versus another team. It was against the Texans offense.
Yeah.
This is what I want to say off the bat. Listen, everybody, listen, if you're out there, just you gotta toughen up a little, okay? Some of you guys out there, you hear reports that the Texans offense had a rough day at practice, and immediately you're like, oh, I can't believe people are being this negative about the Texans. I can't believe, oh, they're all alarmed that the Texans offense had a bad day. No, they had a bad day. What do you want me to do? You want me to feed you candy? You want me to tell you lies? You want me to tell you that grandma's going to live forever? No, she's going to die. Okay? You come here for the truth. Damn it.
And the truth is, yesterday, they were.
Both your grandmas died offensively yesterday.
Yeah, man. A lot of grandmas dying. And that's what I teased on the tweet. I said that the defense was snatching souls. It made me think they are an 11-headed Undertaker is what they are right now. This is the music that I hear underneath the entire practice yesterday. Just doomy Undertaker music as Azeez Alshire is intercepting C.J. Stroud. C.J. Gardner-Johnson's getting a pick six on C.J. Stroud. Jalen Petrie should have had a pick against C.J. Stroud. Davis Mills interception to E.J. Speed's interception
of
Davis Mills.
Nice one, yeah.
E.J. Speed is a long, rangy looking dude, and he's like jumping over and scooping it out of a guy's hands. Nick Neiman getting in on the act with the third string.
Yeah.
A lot of turnovers.
Did
yesterday.
You mention Azeez Alshire's?
I did.
I lost track. It was fun because the final 2 minute drill, you know, the ones, the twos, the threes go, every single quarterback threw an interception.
Pick. And to me, and we're going to hear from D'Amico on the offense in just a second. I would say, as much as D'Amico was maybe underselling the defense, he's probably maybe erring to the side of optimism on the offense, which he's supposed to do. I get it.
Right.
And the offense has had good days.
Yeah.
I want to be very clear. They've had good days in camp. Yesterday was not one
that
of them.
That was the point I was trying to make before I had to tell everybody that the grandmas were going to die someday. Was that, the bad days happen and then you see how they rebound. I think the offense has done a good job in this camp a few times of having a bad day, coming back, showing some improvement. The defense had some wrinkles out there yesterday that may have surprised and flummoxed the offense. So we'll see how the offense responds.
Yep, they sure did. So we'll hear from D'Amico in just a second. Defense really good. I think the thing that was just jumped out at me, I think I was standing next to you where you and I were talking about this at the end of practice. I'm like, these look like two units, the defense and the offense. And I'm not talking like first string. So I'm talking the whole defense gathered on one sideline. The whole offense still in the middle of the field wondering what the hell just happened for the last hour and a half.
Yeah.
And the body language, the energy was so drastically different. Like the defense was jumping around, energy level high. The offense looked like they looked like they were ready to go to the funerals for all the grandmas you just killed.
It was funny. Dead grandmas.
Yeah.
As D'Amico was calling everybody up, it looked like the defense just found out that they were going to Sizzler. You know? And we're going to Sizzler.
Yeah.
Doing a dance about it. The offense, it looked like they looked like they were Abraham's son Ishmael, who just learned that he was going to be circumcised.
That's right.
Like, oh, this is... Guys, yeah,
45 circumcisions coming.
Yeah. When we go into the locker room.
Line up.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday. So that was, to me, that was the theme yesterday. Like the defense, they've won days before. That was a dominant performance by the defense yesterday across all first string. There were some moments for the offense. Here's D'Amico Ryans. He's still excited about the offense.
In the same vein, as I said, for the defense, our offense is getting better. That's training camp. I talk about it all the time. I'm not just throwing out a term, but when I talk about iron sharpening iron, if everybody brings their best every single day, we will all get better. We're still one team. We're going to go out and compete against another team. We are making each other better here. Our offense is making our defense better. Defense is making our offense better. And that's what training camp is all about. So I'm very, excited to see where our guys are. And really, I'm excited to see them go play against someone else. It's becoming that time of camp where it starts to get a little chippy. Guys are tired of going against each other. So I'll be excited, when the end of the week comes and we're able to go against Minnesota.
Yeah, and we know that Minnesota's offensive starters are going to play. Some Minnesota divulged that J.J. McCarthy will get some snaps. So you wonder if, the Texans offense versus that Vikings defense, they had some issues last year. Mm-hmm. Some of you might recall. I would like the Texans starters to be able to go up against that defense, which is going to be way more vanilla in the preseason than you see in the regular season. But to see how they fare and how they work in this new system with CJ having more command, it's a big test and a challenge. So even maybe it's only two series, but I would love to see it. And just really what I want to see is physical play out of the offensive line, because that's what they're focused on. You can very much see in practice and just by virtue of Nick Cayley talking about it and the offensive linemen talking about it, they want to be able to impose their will on defensive lines and linebackers in the run game. So let's see if you can do it versus a really good defense.
Yep, absolutely. Well, let's talk about the offensive line a little bit, because that was another theme from yesterday. And it happened early in camp. The very first play for the ones in team drill, 11-on-11, Cam Robinson goes down with a leg injury. That'll be something to try to find out today if we have more information on Cam Robinson. He's been there starting left tackle. He's been the first string left tackle throughout virtually the entirety of camp. He goes out with an injury, and then what got interesting was Ariante Ursary, the rookie, moves from right to left. Okay, that makes sense. In a normal NFL world, if that were week four of the regular season, in would come your swing tackle, you would think, a backup tackle. And instead of elevating Blake Fisher, now maybe this is just something where they wanted to keep continuity and keep the same guys together, but they move Titus Howard from right guard out to right tackle, which he's played before. Maybe that has something to do with it. And they bumped Juice Scruggs in at right guard at first string. And if that sequence of events were to have happened in the regular season, and I got to believe that maybe this is still the case right now in August, is that they trust an offensive line with Juice Scruggs at right guard more than they do their backup right tackle to move up and play actual right tackle with the ones. Blake Fisher did not play right tackle with the ones yesterday.
I thought, if anything, it was just an indication of, oh, man, the depth on this offensive line is still very, very scary. I mean, the starters themselves, because we've spent time with it and we've become accustomed to, okay, this is the guys who are probably going to roll out. You got to remind yourself that, yeah, there are a lot of question marks about this offensive
line. Jake Andrews has played like 70 snaps.
Right. Jake Andrews is
he's the first string center.
It looks like he's going to be the starter. He's played 76 snaps in the NFL. Jarrett Patterson is the crusty old veteran
who's been here 2 years.
Yeah, and by the way, Jay, I tried to look at that through this lens yesterday.
Yeah.
Is a nose tackle, which guy would I not want to play against? Or which guy would I choose to play against? I think right now, physically, Andrews is more impressive in the run game. I think I'd have a harder time versus him than Jarrett Patterson. Mm-hmm. Pass protection, there's a little bit of iffiness on both of them.
Yeah.
But for a team that really wants to run the ball, I think they like the physicality of Jake Andrews.
Yeah, I mean,
don't let your head blow up, Jake, all right? I'd still beat you. Mm-hmm. It would just be a little bit more difficult with Patterson.
Higher degree of difficulty. Yeah. That is something crazy that we really – haven't dug into is like, okay, this is what they're going. This is what we're going with at center, like a guy who's got very little NFL experience. And it's not like he's, you know. And for those who like to go back, well, he's got very little NFL experience, but he's a first round or second round reclamation project. Like that's probably what they're talking. Like if they're talking about Kenyon Green in Philly, not like they need Kenyon Green to come through in Philly, but that's what they're probably talking about. This guy was a 15th overall pick. We get him in here, and maybe we get something out of him. Jake Andrews, I think, was undrafted. Was he a fourth-round pick?
Yeah, he wasn't.
Okay, he was an undrafted. Yeah. He's just played about as much as an undrafted.
Yeah, so there are a lot of question marks. So there's a lot on Cole Popovich and on Nick Caley and just on them being able to operate as a unit better than they did last year.
Yeah, here's D'Amico on the offensive line shuffle that took place yesterday.
As you see with our offensive line, you'll see different guys in different spots. You've seen that from OTAs. You've seen that throughout training camp. No different, no extra news to report or anything about it today. Is just our guys are moving around just like they've done kind of all camp.
Okay. And obviously yesterday's was kind of a forced one because of the injury to Cam Robinson.
But it was the Texans offense came out with the twos first, second stringers, and Cam Robinson was running with the second team.
Yeah.
So that's where it was already,
they're mixing,
you can tell there's already going to be a little bit more competition, and they want to see Ursary get some, and it might have been as simple as they want to see Ursary get some snaps on the left and the right.
And they've been throughout camp, they've been starting Ursary with the ones at right and with the threes at left.
Yeah.
So they've been doing that.
So you might have just wanted to get some more work with Ursary against better competition.
Titus bumping out to right tackle was a wow moment, though, yesterday. As far as you can get wow moments in the offensive line in training camp, like, oh, okay, well, this, because we hadn't seen it yet in camp.
Yeah.
You hadn't seen it yet.
I think with Ursary, just my quick notes on him is that there's times just yesterday where he looked like a rookie at times, but on his good reps, he had some nice pass protection reps I saw versus Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter. You can see the upside there. I mean, he's just got great length. He moves really well and quickly for a guy who's as big as he is. There's just some things he needs to clean up. Like, he's a huge guy who can absorb contact, but he lets guys into his body a little too much. But these are things that 2 or 3 weeks into training camp, your rookie year, I'm not worried about. I think there's definitely a lot of upside there.
That pick needs to work out because apparently Josh Simmons is killing it in Kansas City, and they used the 32nd overall pick on him.
Yeah, and the Texans, and Josh Connerly.
Texans tried to move back in.
Josh Connerly, the offensive tackle, is in Washington, and he's probably not going to play right away because they have Laremy Tunsil. But, like, there are other people that could Kenyon Green this situation.
Yeah.
Kenyon Green is not doing so hot in Philadelphia, apparently.
Stoutland, the magic, he hasn't sprinkled the magic Stoutland dust on him yet?
I guess he's barely practiced, so I think maybe he's injured again. He's just injured all the time.
Tradition like
I don't know.
It's a tradition like no other. All right, we should mention, too, Dameon Pierce activated. We'll talk about that. What does that mean to the running back room? I've got a room that I think is going to involve the toughest cut that we'll get to. And we got to circle back to the Astros. They won. Carlos Correa got to go through a handshake line yesterday for the first time as an Astro since the 2021 World Series. So we get you all up to speed on that. Man, it is fun. We are live in West Virginia. We'll be back out at practice today. Practice starting at 9 o'clock Houston time today. Seth and I will be out there. Keep it tuned here all day long. Keep it tuned on our social media as well. We were posting a ton yesterday. Stay there. Astros update next.
Haynu had three hits, his first three at-bats coming off the IL. That ball hit hard by Sanchez, and that's going to be a first run of the game for the Astros. Jesus Sanchez against his former team, an RBI double. His first Astros double is against his former team. It's 1-0.
Okay, that was last night. The Astros go on to win 8-2. They get a nice performance from Jason Alexander. That was cool to see. We'll talk about what the pitching situation is going to be for the rest of this Miami series as we come to you live from West Virginia and Texans training camp. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. I bumped in with that for a few reasons. Significant because it was Sanchez's first double as an Astro. Mm-hmm. He had an RBI against his old – that's his first at-bat against his old team. My favorite part of that entire play, though, and that got the Astros a lead – on the heels of a stretch of 18 games where the other team took the lead in every game, the Astros have now scored the first run in 7 straight games. It's one of the weirdest things ever. But my favorite part of this whole thing, you weren't watching that play. You were down the hall. You taking a bathroom break or something. Yeah. And I'm like, Seth, you got to come see this. Jesus Sanchez, who we joked about yesterday, like getting thrown out Altuve style in one of the first games he played as an Astro. Like, oh, he'll fit right in.
His very first game.
His very first game. Sanchez hits a double, slides in, and is celebrating while standing like 3 feet off the base. He's jumping up and down, and the guy, the Marlins shortstop, is holding the ball
several feet from him,
barely me to you, like 5 feet away. Like, get on the base. Get on the base.
He fits right in, man.
Oh my God,
he smiles all the time.
He does smile all the time.
Yeah. I love that. And listen, everybody, he's a much better outfielder in general than he's maybe showed in these first few games.
That's what we're told.
He's had a few curious plays.
Neither of us have watched a lot of Marlins baseball.
In the outfield, but he's exactly what the team needs. He can hit left-handed. Yep. He takes care of right-handed pitching, and he can play all three outfield positions.
There you go.
And he smiles a lot.
Smiles, man. He's happy.
It's very important to be happy all the
time these days,
Sean.
Hell yeah. Here was Joe Espada yesterday after the game. Again, Astros win 8-2. That was nice to see. On Sanchez's contributions.
No, he was part of that, our meeting today. He spoke in there. He knows that club well. He knows Alcantara well. He gave us some tips, and let's not ask him about them. Okay. But this kid wants to be here. He's happy to be here. When I say here with us, coming back home and putting, having that performance, I'm sure he's satisfied.
That's nice. He gave all the cheat codes to the Marlins. Have been one of the hottest teams in baseball.
Yeah.
They're 20-10 over their last 30 games going into last night.
Yeah, they got a 6-series streak of either winning or not losing a series.
Yeah, and we know what that's like.
Yeah, I know. Six, whatever.
Hey, Marlin fans, it's not going to last.
Yeah, don't worry, Marlin fans. Yeah. There's a good chance you're going to lose
eight
of your next 10.
That's right.
Yeah, starting tonight, damn it.
Including your next two. Yeah, that's right.
Altuve, too, after getting off to a bad start, mishandled a very easy to handle ground ball to allow a runner on first, but then had a bunt, successful bunt.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
on that same trip around the bases, had a steal immediately.
Yeah,
afterwards.
Man. Yeah. So that was good to see. Good. Carlos Correa gets to experience a win again in an Astros uniform for the first time in almost 4 years. So that was cool. And Jason Alexander, that to me was probably the biggest story last night, is anytime you're getting outings like this against a hot baseball team, from guys that you're bringing up for spot starts, and Jason Alexander pitched 6 shutout innings. The biggest thing was getting out of a bases-loaded jam in the 6th when the game was still 5-0. You know, that's a comfortable lead, but the bases are loaded. All of a sudden, you know, the run that's coming to the plate, they can get within a run with one swing of the bat, and Jason Alexander able to get out of that bases-loaded jam in the 6th. Here was Joe Espada on that.
Yeah, he made pitches. He was you could see the fatigue, but he was still making good pitches, and he really stepped up. He really did. It's someone who we've been asking him to do, get on that plane and come back and give us outings, and he's been able to do a great job every time he steps on the mound.
That's true. It's one thing when you just get in your car and drive up to Daikin Park from Sugar Land to start a game. Like, here's your itinerary. Here, get on a flight, and we need you. Not that he's flying in the Red Baron in an outdoor plane or something like that.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But it is easier just to drive up to the ballpark. So
and then on the opposite side, Sandy Alcantara had a no hitter going through 3 innings.
Perfect game.
Except that, you wouldn't have expected the no hitter was going to continue. The Astros were. The Astros were rifling the ball directly at Rays players the first 3 innings. They had so much hard contact.
I want to see a no-hitter like that someday. Teams are just hitting rockets
just
at guys.
Out
27
lucky.
Outs, and it's like 25 of them have exit velos of 110.
Yeah, average exit velo, mock speed.
Yet
he had a no-hitter going. So, except that after watching the Astros for the last 10 games, I'm sitting there watching. I'm like, yeah, they're gonna end up giving Alcantara a no hitter with just like this.
Yeah,
that somehow they're not gonna figure out a way to get any runners on base, which might be just as well, because during that losing stretch, they were leaving runners on base all over the place. Double digit runners left on base was very, very frequent. So this is versus a team that is it's not your older brother's Marlins. This is they've been on a little bit of a tear, even though they've got a 500
baseball
record.
Team. Yeah.
I mean, Alcantara could have been an Astro, except that the Marlins are kind of stuck in that spot of like, oh, do we sell? Or I guess we can't really sell these days with the extra playoff.
They kind of Sanchez coming to the Astros notwithstanding. I mean, I think they were viewed more as a team that kind of stood pat.
Yeah.
More so than dumping guys. But so the pitching situation now for the rest of this series is the Astros are going to they're going to start an opener today, get a couple innings, and then do a bullpen game. And then Spencer Arrighetti gets his first start since breaking his hand in Seattle in early April. in a freak accident. Here was Joe Espada yesterday after the game on how the Astros are going to handle the pitching the rest of this series.
We're going to have an opener, so I can share with you that Spencer will open Wednesday.
The opener tomorrow, Spencer opens Wednesday.
Wednesday, correct.
Spencer.
Rigetti will start on Wednesday.
Okay.
Tomorrow will be an opener.
Spencer starts
on Wednesday. Correct. Is that?
You said Rigetti opens Wednesday. But I didn't know if he was going to be an opener too.
No, he's a starting pitcher. Okay. He is an opener.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Tomorrow will be a reliever, which is an opener.
Okay.
There you go. All right. Thank you. Good night.
Okay. Right. That was a bit of disconcerting audio right there.
Espada. Let's.
Does Joe Espada not know what an opener is?
He does. The fact that he got sensitive about it, I guess, is.
Spencer Arrighetti is starting the game, and thus he is opening the game.
I'm like, just flat out gone through. We're going with an opener, and then it's going to be he explained an opener exactly what it was.
Dude,
and he just messed up and called Arrighetti an opener.
Those were perfectly logical questions. By I think I heard Chandler's voice in there.
Yeah.
It might have been McTaggart's voice. I mean, they asked him twice.
Right.
Like we're just reconfirming because you said Arrighetti is open.
This isn't a gotcha moment.
No,
we're not trying to get you. We're just clarification.
Had there been no follow up questions to it, you and I would now be going, okay, does Spencer Arrighetti pitch 2 innings or 6 innings today?
Yeah, yeah. So,
and I'm not sure I know.
No, the fact that Espada. The fact that Espada did get a little defensive there tells me that maybe that was a little bit of a Freudian slip. Maybe he didn't want to divulge that Arrighetti's only going to go a couple of innings. So that he kind of backpedaled a little bit aggressively. Yeah.
I would be surprised if he only went a couple innings, only because in his rehab starts, his pitch count got up to where he could do at least 4 or 5 innings.
I'm not going to be surprised by a single damn thing with this baseball team, Sean.
Oh, especially the pitching, too.
We find out that Paredes is going to try to make a go at it.
Oh, yes, yes.
Which was interesting. Paredes decides he's going to get a PRP injection in his hammy.
Right.
And try to rehab it so he could possibly make it back later this season or in the playoffs. This was interesting to me, and I think it's perfect for a Pender poll, Sean.
Okay.
Because in just looking at the replies from Chandler Rome's tweet, I think I saw it from Chandler Rome first, I think fans were split down the middle in terms of some people saying, oh, yeah, hell yeah, good for him. And then the other 50% saying, yeah, good for him, except I really wish this is the kind of thing that ends with, oh, he tries to come back and then injures it even worse and doesn't play at all in 2026.
Yeah.
I think 50% want him to be more conservative and just get ready for next year. There's another 50% that are you know, let's balls to the wall. Let's do this thing.
Here's my question. If he were to come back, let's say he rehabs the injury. He comes back in September or October. Where do you put him? And I know that the conventional wisdom is going to say, well, you just slide him over to second base. That's been a problem all year. The talk is he can play second base. The closer it got to them acquiring a third baseman to replace him when he got hurt, and then ultimately they wind up with Carlos Correa, which is, you know, that takes it to a whole separate level. But there was more and more trepidation that I saw both around the league and reportedly within the Astros about playing Paredes at second base.
Yeah.
The more the reality of a new third baseman coming in that was as good as Paredes or in that same category of player, the more trepidation there was about him playing second base. So my thing is, if he makes it back before the end of the season, if it's a guy who already were a little iffy on being able to slide over at second base, are you telling me you slide him in cold, having not played there all season, coming off of a hamstring injury?
Right. Well, I think this is where, you know,
because Correa and Payne are your left side of your infield.
But listen, I think I don't want to overthink it. If Paredes comes back, it's not like they're going to be sliding him in as an everyday player. There's going to be some load management there. There's going to be an injury somewhere along the way in the infield. I think that remember when we used to complain about how the Astros have too many good starting pitchers?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, half of them were injured.
Yeah, a good veteran bat.
Yeah.
There on the bench.
He's a better player. Paredes coming back, if he can reasonably play and if it's smart medically to do it, and we don't trust this team to do things we don't trust the medical situation at all. That you just, I don't think of him as, oh, he's going to come back and replace Correa or something. It's that Peña. Look, we've seen Peña 2 days after his return from his rib injury, have to take a break for a hamstring cramp.
Yeah.
Like, it's just extra hands on deck.
Well, and this is where some of the versatility of guys like Urias and especially Dubon, who can play infield and outfield, come in.
Yeah.
Because maybe it's not Paredes versus – maybe it's not, hey, is Paredes your second baseman? Is Paredes a better vet bat to have on the bench than Cooper Hummel?
Right.
That kind of thing.
Or versus a call-up. You know, you can't worry. Any of these guys, including Paredes, over Bryce Matthews or Melton at this point, are that's who you want in the playoffs.
Yep. So Arrigetti is the one who's imminently coming back. He's going to start / open on Wednesday. There's a slew of them that are still going to be in Sugarland.
It'd be like if somebody told me, hey, here's $10,000, and me saying, I don't have that in my investment plan right now, okay? Trying to work with I wouldn't call up Trajan Wealth and say, hey guys,
I've got too much money.
Somebody wants to give me $10,000, but I don't want to make you guys work any harder, so I'm going to turn it down.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
That just happened to me once, by the way. I won a $10,000 in groceries at a grocery store.
Oh, really?
But it was one of those things where it was at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And I felt bad because I was like, hey guys, can I wait until January to accept this?
What'd they say?
They said, oh yeah, sure, we get this all the time.
Oh, okay.
And then I felt really bad, so I just ended up giving it to charity. Which I'm always dicey with when you're doing it with a corporation.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I really should have accepted the $10,000 in groceries and then given those charity cards to a charity of my choice.
Yeah.
I never trust that the company is going to actually... Like, okay, so they give me $10,000 in groceries, which to them is probably only like $5,000 in inventory.
Correct,
whatever the deal is,
retail,
however
wholesale,
it works out.
Yeah.
And where I'm like, all right, well, I could probably help somebody else. But anyway.
Yeah.
Hosed me, Sean. They hosed me.
I'm a little disappointed.
I gave it to them for the charity that they had been raising money for.
So
I assume that maybe it all went to,
I think it probably did. Yeah, I'm a little disappointed. We were deprived of watching you try to spend $10,000 in groceries in like 3 weeks.
December. Yeah, there was no time limit.
Oh,
in December. No, but if I accepted the gift cards, that would have been like receiving cash at that point.
Oh! I got you for tax purposes.
Yeah, they gave me
for tax. I got you. I thought they were giving you a $10,000 shopping spree with an expiration date of the calendar year.
I should have explained that. Yeah. No, I was worried about the tax implications.
Got you.
I didn't want to mess up my tax.
I got you. Okay. I'm picturing you sticking your arm on the Little Debbie shelf and just sweeping it into a cart. Everything.
That was back when grocery prices weren't necessarily as high as they've been the last couple of years or so. And I, these days I'm like, charity. You can go pound sand. I need these eggs. Damn it.
Yeah. $10,000 doesn't go as far as you think it might go in the grocery store these days. You're excited about the egg prices here in West Virginia.
That was Tops in upstate New York. This is a long time ago.
Oh, okay. That was the grocery store?
Yeah.
Yeah. You were excited about the egg prices yesterday at the Food Lion.
No, not. Well, at the Food Lion, they were pretty damn good. But when I was driving through West Virginia, there were a couple roadside stands where I saw a dozen eggs for $3.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
But the problem is there's no cell phone reception in any of these places. And I never carry cash on me anymore.
Yeah.
So I decided there was no way to. I knew they weren't going to accept Venmo.
Right.
So I missed out, man.
They ain't accepting Venmo. They barely have phone reception in this state.
I'm going to load up on the way back to the airport and I wonder how many eggs do they allow on a plane?
It's a good question.
Should I put them in my checked bag?
713. God, I would love to see the picture of you opening that bag. Yellow splats 6, everywhere.
6,000 eggs.
Yeah, man.
I put them in bubble wrap.
Handle with care. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Day 2 of the Texans at the Greenbrier today. Day 11 of training camp. We're already halfway through training camp. It's flying by, man. So we'll have all the observations for you. And in fact, top of the hour, we'll get back to some of our training camp thoughts. Also, top of the hour, there was an article in the Washington Post yesterday. And apparently, if the offensive line room for the Texans was toxic, it ain't this guy's fault. We'll tell you all about that at the top of the hour. We'll go into some headlines, though, coming up next. Stay there.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
Correa with a line drive to left. That'll be down for a hit. In to score Sanchez. Altuve being held up. Astros lead 2-0. Carlos Correa has an RBI single to left.
Is it still a little surreal for you to have Carlos Correa on this baseball team? It is for me still.
It is weird. I mean, there's a whole lot of, there's former Astros who are now current Astros. Yeah. And Neris is back. And Neris is not as...
Singleton was back for like a week.
Yeah. Singleton. Well, he was back for a week, but then previously he was back for a year, but then before that
Yeah, three times.
No, but Correa is the one that you never quite expected. It was like, oh, okay, he's going to be one of these guys. If Springer came back, that might be the most surreal one.
Yeah.
It's obviously not going to happen this year or probably anytime in
especially because I think of all the guys that left... by the way, the Astros win 8-2 last night against the Marlins. This is headlines, but I like this conversation. I think Springer would have been the strangest one because I felt like that was the one that where there was actually some acrimony between Springer and the team because of how they manipulated his service time as an older player.
Yeah.
He didn't hit free agency until he's 31 years old. And I did fine. He made $150 million.
And Springer had been through every... He's kind of like Titus Howard with the Texans because Springer wasn't a Luno draft pick.
He was Ed Wade. Yeah.
He had kind of just seen the good, the bad, the ugly of the business
side.
It's a great analogy. So I think he had made some statements before he ever reached free agency where it didn't sound like he was angry about it, but it was just that he very much understood the business side of things and he wasn't going to... There was no amount of loyalty to the Astros that somehow needed to be repaid.
Yeah.
Like they had deliberately really messed with his service time and his money, his bottom line, because they could, because they were a bad team.
I feel like I Pender polled this exact topic at some point over the last year. Like, if you could bring back one guy that left in free agency, probably when Bregman was leaving in free agency, I probably put it up like, who would you bring back? Cole, Correa, Springer, or Verlander? Something like that. And I think Springer won that poll, but I'm guessing Correa finished really well, which, again, adds to the surrealness of what's going on right
now. Yeah, and it's nice. It feels good, and I kind of try to check myself in saying, all right, as lots of times the thing that feels good isn't the right thing to do. You'll learn in life that a lot of times it's really the wrong thing to do.
Oftentimes it's the wrong thing,
With Correa, though, I think it is the non... measurable part of it, just the infusion of energy, or just the fabric of the Astros culture, or that way. I think that is a real thing, and I think it's a shot in the arm in a lot of ways.
I get like that kind of sports chill thing going when I think of October at bats with Carlos Correa in an Astro uniform. Like it's the October part.
You're exactly 100% right. Thank you for bringing it back to that. It's Correa being one of the most consistently productive players in the postseason in Major League Baseball history. He's just freakishly consistently good in the playoffs. So whether you want to call it the clutch gene or anything else, it's the Astros, by virtue of having played in so many playoff games, it's not just some small sample size oddity or anything. Correa is nails in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So having that, 100%. It's October. I don't want him to suck until
No.
Obviously, but him in October makes a big
difference. It's so fun to go look. If you ever find a website that's got playoff stats, counting stats by position, like third base, Bregman is way up there. Yeah. Altuve, second base. Correa at shorts. Yuli Gurriel, like the names he's alongside at first base are all-time greats, but he's right in there because he's played 80 games or whatever it is in the postseason. It's crazy.
It's like once you play long enough, it's kind of like Clayton Kershaw, you know?
Yeah.
It got to a point where Clayton Kershaw was bad in the playoffs so many times that even the stat nerds were saying, this is something. This is it's not just flukish.
Yeah.
The stat nerds will usually be the first to say, hey, small sample size.
Yeah.
Nah, don't read too much into it. Now, on the flip side, Correa has been the opposite. He's been really good in the playoffs for a long time.
Yep, that'll be exciting. They win 8-2 last night, so they take the first game in this series with the Marlins. The Astros will start an opener, yet to be named, I guess, tonight, a bullpen arm. It's going to be a bullpen game, and then Spencer Arrighetti will start in the series closeout on Wednesday, I should say. We're at Texans training camp, live here in West Virginia. We are at our Airbnb right now, but we'll be out at the Greenbrier in about an hour and change, getting ready for practice number 2 here in West Virginia. Practice number 1 in West Virginia yesterday was marked by dominance on the defensive side of the ball, the likes of which I think we've only seen in one other practice. The defense has won more practices than they've lost. This was one. There's only one other practice I can remember seeing the offense just look this demoralized at the end of practice.
They're going to send Azeez Alshire, one of his cleats, to the Hall of Fame.
For this practice
yesterday. One of the best defensive performances.
Yeah.
It's going to be right up next to Bill Belichick's defensive game plan from the Super Bowl the Giants game.
Yep.
Against the Bills. So
it was good.
That's how good the defense
They
looked.
Were good, yeah.
And it really, listen, It's not, we're not sitting here saying, no, all is lost. No, it was just, it was an impressive performance by the defense, and it was kind of a reminder that the offense has work to do. There are some things about what the offense is doing right now that is, it's genuinely, it's really, really hard to establish your physical run game in training camp where you're trying to stay up off the ground.
Yeah.
The double teams can't be just quite as ferocious. And I do see progress in some of those fronts. I want to see it in preseason games. Obviously, I want to see it in the regular season. But some of it right now is also the defense. They threw some wrinkles in defensively that I don't think the offense had seen yesterday. The question is, all right, how does the offense respond to that?
Yeah.
In the back and forth. And we've seen that this year during training camp. The offense was taking it on the chin for the first few practices. Then all of a sudden they put it together.
Yeah.
And they showed some progress. I think there's a good chance that the offense comes out looking a lot sharper today.
The turnovers were a big thing yesterday. They closed out each of the situational drills, first string, second string, third string offense at the end of the two. They each had an opportunity in the two-minute drill at the end of practice. All three of them ended with interceptions. Azeez Al-Shaair in the first string drills, EJ Speed. I liked seeing that one because it was a really athletic pick by EJ Speed in the two second string drills. And then Nick Neiman had what I think would have been a pick six in a regular game against Graham Mertz off of a tipped ball. You said yesterday about CJ and the interceptions, and I agree with your take in general that hey, quarterbacks that aren't throwing any interceptions in the preseason, that's not good either because it shows they're not...
They're probably not really working on things, kind of feeling where their limits are.
Yeah. How did you fit... CJ threw two picks and a near pick to Jalen Petrie yesterday. Did those picks fit that category?
No, I think that they're the types of interceptions that, okay, you don't just brush off. That it's that, all right, he looked either frustrated or flummoxed or just got surprised perhaps by the one near interception to Jalen Petrie looked like the classic, I didn't expect that guy to be there.
Yeah.
You know, that
he's had a few of those.
I was watching the actual offensive line, so I just lifted my eyes up to see the very end of the play when CJ throws the interception. But Petrie was probably lurking and kind of popped up into a zone that CJ didn't expect.
Yeah.
So that's when you watch from the end zone when the defense is really dialed in, you can see how the quarterback just doesn't have a whole lot of options when they're playing as well, when the defense is playing as well as they are.
The ones that I think fit your category, and CJ had one, it wasn't a pick earlier in camp, but it should have been. Kalen Bullock didn't catch it. But CJ's rolling out to his right and he throws it back across the middle to a covered guy. The ones that I don't mind are the ones where I go, well, he just wouldn't throw that. He'd throw it into the stands in the regular season. Like the ones yesterday were not that. Like they were, they were jumping routes and things like that.
There's some of them. Do you remember Justin Herbert's interception in the Lions? Was it in the Lions game? No, it was in the Chargers game. The Chargers game Justin Herbert was rolling out to his right and threw it deep across the field.
Kamari picked it
up. To Kamari last year.
Yeah.
And I talked to Kamari about that play yesterday.
Yeah.
Did I not say Kamari?
No, you said Kamari.
Okay.
Yeah.
Threw it deep across the field to Kamari. And Kamari was really cool about it. Because I kind of asked Kamari, were you kind of surprised that Herbert made that throw?
Mm-hmm.
He said, no, he's a really new good quarterback. I knew that he could make that throw, but I also knew the receiver had gotten some ground on him. He said, I knew I had time to make that ground back up and get in phase because the ball was going to be in the air a long time. And I'm still thinking about it, and I went back and watched the play after Kamari talked about it. No, Justin Herbert shouldn't have attempted that throw.
Yeah,
That was a little bit of, man, Justin Herbert in the playoffs has been atrocious in his career and in big games. That's the kind of play. I don't want to see CJ start to be the kind of quarterback that tries to make throws that he shouldn't be making.
Yep, I agree. The other headline with the Texans, Dameon Pierce activated yesterday. This was after practice because he was working out off to the side. He and Christian Harris were both working out on the side, but both look great physically. They're moving really, really well. Dameon Pierce activated. We'll talk about that in the 7 o'clock hour. That running back room is a really interesting one.
They were doing a drill, Dameon Pierce and Christian Harris were, where it looked like they were on pogo sticks. Because they were just bouncing up and down in place.
Yeah.
And it was pretty damn impressive. They looked like kangaroos on a trampoline.
Yeah.
Like they were getting some. And so my first thought was, I don't know how transferable that specific skill is to football, except that physically, Christian Harris and Damian Pierce look pretty damn bouncy and spry.
They
right
did.
Now.
Yeah,
so
that's
I'm
the
guessing
takeaway.
They're just being extra careful with them.
That's what I'm hoping. That's what I'm hoping for sure. So we'll talk about that more in the 7 o'clock hour. The running back room gets Damian Pierce back. Joe Mixon obviously still out, and he's going to be out for a while. All right, coming up next. The Washington Post did an article about Laremy Tunsil, a long profile about the new left tackle in our nation's capital. And the person coming to Laremy's defense, this is wild. The one person coming to Laremy's defense is the one person that Laremy might have gotten fired.
Mm-hmm.
So we will talk about that. We've got some incredible quotes from this article. If you're wondering why the offensive line was such a disaster last year, we'll reveal some things, I guess, coming up next.